and we're taking that as a topic. But then comes the question, who are you? So here's an artist's rendering of what you are, what you eat might mean. The hamburger head becomes hamburger. Then here's another artist's rendering of the same idea, that if you take the life of an animal and cause great pain and suffering to that animal in so doing, then the role reversal takes place by law of karma. So a simpler definition of you are what you eat is whatever you put in your body, then your body becomes that which you have put in your body. But there's another dimension to all of this. You are what you eat. This has to do with who you are. Every day, pretty much at fixed times or general times in all parts of the world, there's a ritual that everybody observes, and that's eating. And the things that people use to decide what they're going to eat, something that they like the taste of, something that has nutrition, something that's cost effective, something that's quick and easy, etc. However, this presentation is going to focus on consciousness. There are other principles, mercy, compassion, and so on, that have an effect on our consciousness. And eating consciously helps determine who you are. In general, the thought is there that the purpose of food, and these are taken directly from Bhagavad Gita, foods in the mode of goodness in particular, they increase the duration of life and they purify the mind. At least ideally that's what the purpose of food is, and you have to eat to get some strength. Under the banner of food research, the things that modern science looks at is the way that food is manufactured, the way that food is packaged, the way the food is transported, what's the nutritional ingredients within any given food, how it's preserved. But how much effect food has on our consciousness is something that a little research would be benefited by. Consciousness in modern science, there are consciousness studies that are developing, but it's not well understood by modern science. At the same time, consciousness affects everything that we do. How we conduct our thoughts, speech, actions, our whole life revolves around consciousness, and food very much affects consciousness. So we're going to focus on that. This is a modern presentation in Appleton, Wisconsin, a little video clip of a study that was done there, like a pilot study, to see how the food that the students ate in the classroom, or excuse me, not in the classroom, in the cafeteria, affected their consciousness. And it's been presented as a case study and kind of proliferated to different high schools in America. So the lady on our left pretty much, you know, doesn't look like a radical personality, but she's the main spokesperson that food affects the consciousness of students in classrooms. So we're going to hear her speaking. Whoops, hopefully we'll hear her speaking.
Barbastit may not look like a radical, but she's leading what could be a revolution in how we feed our kids in school.
We can't keep putting the hydrogen really fat. We can't keep putting the white sugar, white flour. We can't keep putting artificial coloring, artificial flavoring foods in our children's lives. It's destroying their health. It's destroying their ability to work up to their level. and it is destroying their ability to behave and remember.
Barker Stitt is a noted nutritionist and co-owner of the Natural Ovens Bakery in Manitowoc, Wisconsin. The bakery produces whole grain, chemical-free cereals and breads. But Barker's strong opinions about food aren't just based on theories and a test kitchen.
I was a probation officer for 20 years in Ohio, and working with people from the courts, I discovered that correcting the diet is not correcting the behavior.
In the last few years, Barbara's natural food nutrition plan has begun to make national headlines. Her first big success came at Appleton Central High School, about an hour from her bakery. It was a place that, back in 1997, had many problems. The students struggled through the day. Too many missed classes. Too many were dropping out. And the stress didn't stop with the kids.
In January of 1997, I visited Central High School as a prospective employee and observed the students that were housed here at the time, found them to be rude, obnoxious, very crude, and ill-mannered.
Hey, y'all! Appleton Central High hadn't had a kitchen for 7 years. The students' meals were coming largely from fast food restaurants and soda, snack, and candy machines. So, at the request of teachers and administrators, Barbara and Paul Stitt began working on a new food plan for Central High. First, a real breakfast. Whole grain bagels, granola, muffins, fruit juice, an energy drink with concentrated omega-3. The effect was almost immediate.
For me, it makes me feel like I have a better attention span. And I don't feel like I'm tired all day.
Central High is an alternative school. Students here are considered at risk.
And not only because I've actually eaten breakfast when normally I didn't, before I got to come to school again.
We know that they're coming to school partly because they know they're going to get a good meal here, and that gets them in the door.
Soon, it was time for step two, lunch.
We went in the kitchen, put in the cooks, provided the fresh whole foods, eliminated the fast foods, the vending machine foods.
The result was a daily lunch menu for the Appleton kids that's attracted national attention.
Home-cooked natural foods is a much more healthy way to go with it. So, say, eating hamburgers every day for lunch, or going home and having fast food pizza for dinner.
The atmosphere is entirely different. The students are calm, they're well-behaved. I don't have to deal with the daily discipline issues.
Our teachers can teach because students are ready to learn. I think the hot lunch program and breakfast program here at Central have helped students be ready to learn.
It's a success story so impressive, the Natural Ovens recipe for Central High is expanding to the 15,000 other kids in the Appleton district. An early concern was the cost.
I can't buy the argument that it's too costly for schools to provide good nutrition for the students. I found that one cost will reduce another. I don't have vandalism. I don't have the litter. I don't have the need for high security.
We've cut $5 million out of our operational budget in the last 2 years. We did 35 focus groups in the community, and not one person brought up the issue of you should get back into junk-type foods because they see that healthy lifestyles is important.
Barbara Stitt says the Appleton schools are merely fulfilling a promise made by the federal government in the National School Lunch Act half a century ago.
The foods that we brought into the school were really the foods that were mandated in 1946, which was fresh, whole fruits, vegetables, whole grains, highly nutritious foods.
In its 2004 National School Lunch Report Card, the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine singled out the Appleton program as an ideal that America's other school districts should follow. Barbara believes returning healthy, chemical-free food to schools might hold the answer to other health concerns plaguing young people. Obesity, ADD, heart disease, even diabetes.
I feel personally that this is the most important thing facing our nation. Because if we have 75% or more of our students not being able to work up to their level of ability, we're losing so much. And we can't really keep doing having this charge on it, we must give them the respect for their help.
One of the most remarkable results at Appleton was how they cut their dropout rate at the high school for at-risk kids.
It used to be 10%, but after they switched completely to natural foods, it's dropped to less than 1%. And Appleton is by no means the only school district in the country that's switching to healthier foods.
In Olympia, Washington, school officials have replaced sugary juice drinks with the real thing, added an organic salad bar that's been a big hit with the kids, and contracted with local farmers to provide organic produce to schools.
In Des Moines, Iowa, fruit, carrots, and other veggies are delivered to many classrooms every day. The kids can have as much as they want, and school officials say almost none is left over at the end of the day.
In Los Angeles, Monroe High School has been encouraging students to eat healthier foods as part of a pilot program and seen a 74% decrease in fights in the first year of the program. School officials say they've seen a 50% increase in students eating a healthier lunch. And they say students recently lobbied and got a salad bar as part of the lunch offering.
That's a clip from a longer video, but the idea here is consciousness is affected by the foods you eat, and when your consciousness is elevated, then your performance is better. But these ideas, while the video clip shows that this former officer in a prison setting is now helping kids in schools, the principles are very ancient principles found long ago in the Vedas. And the Vedas teach this very idea, and I'm going to break it down a little bit, that what we eat affects our consciousness, and not only what we eat, but other factors, where we eat, and from whom we eat. So I'm going to do a little Bhagavad Gita quickie here with the modes of nature. Those of you that are familiar with Bhagavad Gita know that it speaks of the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. And here's a direct quote from Bhagavad Gita. There's the verse down here in Sanskrit, and here's the translation. Foods dear to those in the mode of goodness increase the duration of life, purify one's existence, and give strength, health, happiness, and satisfaction. Such foods are juicy, fatty, wholesome, and pleasing to the heart. So, what happened here? Oh, when foods are selected from that category of foods that are in the mode of goodness, there's further detailed descriptions. We'll see some of them. There's, from the perspective of modern science, the value of milk, which is a food in the quality of goodness, has certain protein value and nutritional value. It's described within the Vedic literature. I don't know if you can see from where I am. There we go. Nurturing of brain tissue is something that's described in the Vedas that comes directly from taking of milk. It promotes higher thinking, and there's a number of references from the Vedas that says that yogis in previous times, they subsisted simply by taking milk. In other words, it's a complete food. And what produces the milk is the cow, and what is the cow taking but something that grass that human society doesn't factually require. And from that milk, so many nice, wholesome, and very tasty foods can come. In addition to milk, a vegetarian diet is in general a mode of goodness diet. So besides milk, sugar, rice, wheat, fruits, vegetables, all fresh. certain mineral content, certain protein content within the Vedic system of diet. There are spices, not just for taste, but they serve as like natural medicines. Like one of them, for example, turmeric. When turmeric is used in food, it has a natural blood purifying effect, and so on. People that know the science of cooking using proper spices can help maintain a healthy family or individual. In addition to what ingredients go into the eating and the quality of goodness, there's a whole lifestyle that says a lifestyle and the quality of goodness also, along with the eating process, helps both bodily and mental health. There are times of the day. Somebody just forwarded to me a very detailed description from the Vedic literature, from Ayurveda, when different times of the day when the body produces certain benefits or releases certain toxins and in a very regulated way. So when we eat in the quality of goodness, not only the foods, but at a certain time of the day, not snacking or eating in between meals, but eating at fixed times, and what the atmosphere is like when you're eating, not on the run, but in a very calm and peaceful setting. There's a whole science of, particularly with vegetarianism, combining different foods to make a full balance of what the nutritional requirements are for the body, how much you eat, the benefits of periodic fasting. I'll mention this briefly. In Ayurveda, which is a science of medicine, it recommends every other week fasting in a regular way for cleansing of the body of toxins and drinking fluids to wash or rinse the body of the toxins that are accumulated. Just a standard procedure for better health. There's many details that, if followed, if eating and the quality of goodness is followed above, it solves a lot of the problems that we're addressing at the bottom. I mean, obesity, anxiety, unnecessary stress, environmental pollution, and so on. Problems and problems and problems that arise from the absence of the quality of goodness. Then eating in the quality of passion. It's described in Bhagavad Gita in this way. Foods that are too bitter, too sour, salty, hot, pungent, dry, and burning are dear to those in the mode of passion. Such food cause distress, misery, and disease. And then next is described foods in the mode of darkness in Bhagavad Gita. Food prepared more than 3 hours before being eaten. Food that is tasteless, decomposed, and putrid. And food consisting of remnants and untouchable things is dear to those in the mode of darkness. So here's a quick description of the effects or the qualities of the mode of goodness: higher thinking, cleanliness, satisfaction, self-control, wisdom, truthfulness. Foods in the quality of goodness help promote these qualities. Foods in the mode of passion promote passion. Foods in the mode of darkness promote darkness. So go for goodness. And drilling down a little bit on the principle that as you eat, it affects your consciousness, and if consciousness can be raised to the quality of goodness. One is more productive, one is more happy, less agitated, less disturbed, less filled with this, with the qualities of passion and ignorance. In general, a vegetarian diet is very beneficial for promoting the quality of goodness. It's healthy, it's wholesome, it's economical. There's a vast variety. Just vegetarianism doesn't mean just eating salads and becoming a rabbit. There's varieties, vast varieties of food if one understands how to mix the different ingredients of vegetarianism. The root word of vegetarianism is a Latin word, vegetus, which means whole, sound, fresh, or lively. So, a little summary statement here is that a vegetarian diet, just by the root meaning of the word, it implies a balanced diet. Vegetables, fruits, grains, dairy products. And the result is a balanced philosophical and moral sense of life. So, we'll take some of these items and look at what modern researchers say about it. Can you have a sustained, healthy existence by vegetarianism? These two researchers down below indicate that vegetarians are able to perform physical tasks 2 to 3 times longer than non-vegetarians before tiring out, and can fully recover from fatigue 3 times more quickly than non-vegetarian. So if you have to study for an exam, go vegetarian. With a vegetarian diet, it reduces cholesterol level, so health risks are reduced. Studies show, American Medical Association down at the bottom, 90 to 97% of heart diseases can be prevented by a vegetarian diet. It reduces the risk of cancer substantially. Chances of having a diabetic problem are also reduced. So, be healthy, be vegetarian. And now what about nutrition? This quote at the bottom, during the process of converting grains to meat, 90% of protein, 99% of carbohydrates, and 100% of dietary fibers are lost. So, in other words, so much more protein is available in vegetarian foods. Some people think otherwise, but it's not so. The negative consequences of meat eating, such as the things that animals are fed in order to make healthy animals, so you have lots of meat and so on, it gets carried in the meat. And vegetarians are saved from that byproduct. Here's a Swedish scientist, Carl von Linn. Man's structure, external and internal, compared with that of animals, shows that fruit and succulent vegetables constitute his natural diet. And American Dietitian Association, most of the mankind for the human history has lived on vegetarian or near vegetarian diet. These are some things that many of you have already seen or heard before. The physiology of the human body is that of a herbivore, as opposed to the physiology of a carnivore. That's so rather than go through, well, here's one. In the stomach, for those animals that are carnivores, the acidity is 10 times stronger because it takes a lot to digest meat.
that doesn't happen in a human stomach, and so the undigested products that go into the body for non-vegetarians produce a lot of toxins. The physiology of the body necessary to kill animals, the teeth for what's it called?
Canine teeth are not the same. Our teeth are far more like carnivores. So we have the physiology of a herbivore. And economically, some strong facts. If people adopted vegetarian diet, 60% less gas and transportation would be required. Wow. Each person who becomes a vegetarian saves an acre of trees per year. I don't know how they come up with that statistic. I guess the trees that have to be cut down to produce grazing land or something like that. On an average, a vegetarian requires about 1,200 gallons of water per day as compared to 4,200 gallons per day for a non-vegetarian. That must be an American statistic, not a world statistic. People that are looking towards the world, how much can the Earth sustain human life? Well, 16 times more people can be fed from a vegetarian diet than from a meat-eating diet. That is, it takes so much grain to produce a certain amount of meat. So if people didn't eat meat but rather ate the grain, we could sustain far more humans on this planet. Some names of famous individuals who are vegetarian, some celebrities who were vegetarian or are vegetarian, some vast variety of foodstuffs. This is from an Indian vegetarian menu. But so many, many, many things can be produced from vegetarian foods. And now we'll go into the final section. That is, aside from being vegetarian, you've all heard the argument. I'll present it. The nonviolent argument. The nonviolent argument that says, well, if you take the life of an animal for your food, aren't you also taking life of a vegetable for your food if you're vegetarian? So there's several things that can be said about that. One is, when you take an apple from an apple tree, you don't kill the tree. Or you take a tomato from a tomato plant, you don't kill the tomato plant. Or when you take wheat from the plant that has now turned golden, the life has left the plant and you're just reaping the grain from the harvest. But there are some vegetables that you pull from the ground, like a carrot or a potato or something. So there's some in a vegetarian diet, there's some life that is taken. So the principle then is, how do we deal with the fact that even just by our breathing or our drinking water, or our cooking of our food, or even the cutting of the food, there are living entities that are being sacrificed by our process of eating. And this is addressed in Bhagavad Gita. According to the Vedas, this is a summary of what this verse is saying. The earth planet and the material elements are under the jurisdiction of higher authorities, who are in turn responsible to the personality of Godhead Krishna. Literally what this verse is saying is that the whole of material energy is under the supervision of the Supreme. But break it down further, from the Supreme, there are controlling personalities who are looking after the affairs of universal governance. And when the human society engages in
acts of sacrifice unto the Supreme, by rendering things unto the Supreme, then there's this natural relationship that's established. So, as it's describing here, everything that we require for our sustenance is supplied by God. You can't make food in factories. You can take ingredients and package them in certain ways and process them in certain ways. But the ingredients in support of sustaining our life comes from the earth or comes from nature. Even the animal products, it comes from their consuming vegetation. So ultimately, we're not dependent upon the factories, but we're dependent upon what is produced from the earth and all the natural supply that comes from God. So in all cultures of the world, there's some expression at harvest time of offering thanks unto God or the bounty that's been bestowed upon us. And that's the very same principle as the principle that's found in the Vedic literature, that not just once a year at Thanksgiving time, but whatever it is that we accept as what's sustaining our body, we offer first to the Supreme. This is the spiritual dimension. Krishna describes this in Bhagavad Gita, that by offering even very simple leaf, fruit, flower, or water offered with love and devotion, Krishna accepts that. And when we eat those foods that are first offered to God, it's called in Sanskrit prasadam. There's the word at the very top. Prasadam means mercy, literally. So the mercy of God is received to sustain our lives. So it's acknowledgement of our dependence upon God and what He supplies. But there's a higher principle involved, and that is literally, not just figuratively, literally things are offered to God for His pleasure, and He accepts, according to the message we just read from Bhagavad Gita, and then what's left after His acceptance is His mercy. And there's a verse in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna explains this, but when we take that mercy, then it sanctifies our existence. Here's the verse. The devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sins because they eat food which is offered first for sacrifice. And then the converse. Others who prepare food for personal sense enjoyment merely eat only sin. So there's a spiritual connection with God that's made by taking the foods that are in the quality of goodness and carefully cleaning them, preparing them, and offering them, and then accepting that as one's means of sustenance. It spiritualizes one's body and it spiritualizes one's consciousness. So we're coming to a close here. This one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. The message at the bottom is, when we make offerings to God, He doesn't need anything. The person who's benefiting is not God, because we're offering something to Him. We're benefiting because we're releasing ourselves, in one sense, we're releasing ourselves from the bondage of greediness and selfishness. But we're also then receiving His mercy and thereby sanctifying our existence. It's just part of that spiritual relationship with God to make that offering to Him. You can come back if you like. Here's another Vedic concept, that is, when cooking goes on, the consciousness of the person cooking is transmitted or transferred through the act of cooking. So for one who is following a spiritual path in their life, it's really important to know who the cook is, or the consciousness, and then the cleanliness and the mood of the cook. therefore, in Vedic times, cooks were the priests. It was a priestly function to prepare, offer to God in a very clean and pure atmosphere, offer items to God. And then God would accept, and then others would take the remnants of what was offered to him. So that's a principle that I learned from the teachings of Bhagavad Gita and from my spiritual master. Not just be vegetarian, but when you're the cook, be very careful that you're in the proper consciousness. And when you're eating, be very mindful of where the cooking has come from, because consciousness is transmitted through the act of cooking. Cleanliness, this is another mode of goodness principle. So when cooking, cleanliness is very important. The ingredients themselves, the place where you're doing the cooking, the external, you know, that your body is clean and your mind is clean, and ultimately that the spirit of the act is not for the enjoyment of the tongue, but for the enjoyment of the Supreme, as an act of devotion to the Supreme. There's a number more slides here, and I think I'm going to... Well, there's a relationship in family life. In family life, there's earnings. And how do you use your earnings, your wealth, from family life? Just as the ingredients that we need to sustain our life comes from God, whatever wealth or prosperity we have, it also ultimately comes from God. So householders are recommended to distribute the prasad that they have in their home to others. This is a religious duty. Just in general, people in general, it's a duty of a householder. One who has received bounty from God should distribute it to others in a charitable way. If that mode of goodness principle was followed, then those persons who are less fortunate, not as much receiving the bounty of God as others, there's a natural distribution and a natural diminishing of envy and crime and theft and so many other kinds of problems. The mode of goodness addresses a lot of issues. Here's some of the benefits of prasadam, those who take food that's been offered to God. Because of time, we can go back if you want to read some of these in more detail. There's descriptions in the Vedic literature of great, great saintly personalities, that their greatness became assisted by the taking of the remnants of food that were offered to God. One very prominent example in Vedic literature is Narada Muni. In his previous life, he was the son of a maidservant, but some sages during the rainy season were staying at the place where his mother was taking care. She was responsible for taking care of the needs of travelers at an inn. And Narada was just a small boy. He took the remnants of their food, along with hearing their topics. And gradually he became a very purified person. About 1,300 years ago, a great saintly person, Jamunacharya, lived in South India. He became a king, but his father was a priest, and his father, in his parting words was to his dearest friend, please see what you can do to rescue my son from this life of abandoning his spiritual practices and taking up a worldly life as a king. So there's a certain vegetable, the name of it I'm forgetting, but it by taking this particular vegetable, it promotes the quality of goodness, and the condition of heart is changed. So for 1 year, Jamunacharya's father's friend brought to the king's kitchen this special vegetable. And by taking this special vegetable, the spiritual consciousness, the mode of goodness quality of Jamunacharya became developed. And by hearing the scriptural messages, he returned to his very elevated spiritual position and became a great leader, a spiritual leader in South India. And vegetarian eating can make one very happy. I think this is a photograph that's taken by our the back lawn of our London center. One child was placed in front of a Sunday feast plate. Okay. Maybe I've gone too quickly through all these slides, and if you want, we can go back and discuss. But I thought there would probably be more discussion than just hearing me rattle off a lot of information. So we can have the lights on. Any comments or questions? You want to go back to that slide you wanted to see?
I just wanted to see the end because I had a question about that. But like,
should we go back or we're okay? Okay. Anyone? Yes.
Cool. Here's one question.
Okay. She's deferring to you.
Oh, okay. I've read some of the other parts of the Bhagavad Gita where different groups of people recommended to different activities and different food groups. So that's still...
Yeah. I didn't go into that, but sure. Part of life is balance. And part of eating requires balance also. So with different food groups, some of this and some of this and some of this, and you know, it's more sophisticated as well. There are certain foods from this group that don't go well with certain foods from that group. And you go a little further, and with Ayurveda you have a particular dosha or a quality of mucus, bile, or air, and there's certain foods that you should eat and certain foods that you shouldn't eat besides from food groups. Even that's taken, you know, from the general pool of foods and the quality of goodness. You need to know how to balance or how to mix things and how not to mix things. Here's one that I learned from my spiritual master. He said that according to Ayurveda, there's this saying that says melons are to be eaten alone. It's either eat it alone or leave it alone. Don't mix melon with other types of fruits. Although fruits are the mode of goodness. But you don't mix certain fruits with other fruits. It produces gas and it disturbs the body. Etc. So yes, but back to your point, there are food groups and one should eat in a balanced way. Something, something, and something. And together it provides the nourishment that the body requires.
You're saying partly vegetarian, well, you had many reasons for it, but like one of them was for good consciousness.
Yes.
So what's the difference between like human consciousness and animal consciousness? Because they're obviously animals. So it's like, what makes it different?
What's the human function that animals can't participate in? By that gift of human consciousness, what the Vedas say specifically is exploring or becoming successful in self-realization. To understand who we are and what the goal of life is. With foods and the quality of goodness, then that mode of goodness capacity is brought out or strengthened. And that means the higher purposes of life can be contemplated. But as opposed to an animal, people can behave like animals too, where there's an impulse, you act on the impulse. No, there's defending. So you just snarl and growl and the animal propensities, according to the Vedic description, is eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. And sophisticated humans may do those same things in a more sophisticated way. But the net of it is the same thing in a more polished form. So the unique capacity of the human form of life is self-realization. Some concept of something that's beyond immediate gratification. A higher purpose, a higher principle of life. Understand who we are. Understand our mission. Why are we put here on earth? What is it that we can accomplish in an ideal sense with our life? Those kinds of contemplations are not possible in a lower state of consciousness, in animal or people that are like animals.
And what if you setting out the intention, even if you're eating meat, what if you went through the whole process, we know where it comes from, we thank God for providing it, can that still achieve the same level?
It's certainly better than no acknowledgement of where it came from. But there's on the karmic level or the moral level, if to have that food is the result of violence, say it differently. Same thing, but say it differently. If I can lead my life where other living beings are suffering less at my expense, just for my existence, it's a better way to live. That's a principle of ahimsa or nonviolence that I just expressed. So if one cannot think like that, well, the food also comes from the animal eats the grain, and I take the life of the animal and eat the animal. I acknowledge this is something that's come from God, ultimately. And here I go. But in that process, there's more suffering than needs to exist at my expense. So that sensitivity of nonviolence or diminishing suffering just due to my existence, it's a better way to live. It's a mode of goodness principle to live by. And those that have accepted that mode of goodness principle, their sensibilities and their consciousness is more subtle and sensitized. Say it differently. The modes of nature act covering the consciousness of the living being, or covering the consciousness of the soul. And the mode of darkness or the mode of ignorance is a heavier covering. Less is the mode of passion, and less is the mode of goodness. But the, even in the mode of goodness, it's a facility or an opportunity to realize more subtle subject matters, like, you know, our true identity, who we really are, on a beyond this body or beyond the coverings of the soul consideration or conception. So the short answer to your question is spiritual realization along with acts of violence don't go well together. And I may not be doing the... I had this discussion with some students at Champaign-Urbana, almost the same topic. Even if I don't do that act of killing the animal, but I'm partaking of that act by taking the body of the animal as my sustenance, I'm responsible, according to the Vedic picture of things, I'm responsible as the person who took the life of the animal, the one who raised the animal, the one who killed the animal, the one that transported the animal, the one that cooked the animal, and the one that eats it. I'm implicating my consciousness in that act. So it covers consciousness. My consciousness becomes dulled by that. I'm responsible, karmically.
Biological clock or circadian rhythm that you talked about. Now the scientists are studying at the molecular level how the enzymes, different enzymes change the body in different tissues during the day and the night and all these things. They're very detailed way they're studying. So, and they found the differences. It's not the same level all the time. Many, many enzymes change throughout the day, fluctuation.
Okay. Well, modern scientists are then what I'm thinking is they're finding the same thing that the Vedas said thousands of years ago. It's just verifying something that's true by this methodology instead of that methodology. Okay. Looks like we're ready for...
I have one small practical question. In the Bhagavad Gita, it says that foods that you eat more than 3 hours after they were prepared are in the mode of ignorance. Does that include canned foods and frozen foods? And so does that mean you should avoid those also?
Yes. Yeah, the nutritional value is zippo. There's some taste, and plus lots of preservatives that are harmful for the body, at least in canned foods. And frozen foods, I don't know what the scientists would say, you know, what nutrition is in frozen peas. But I know what Prabhupada said. He said it's like eating cardboard. You know, it's cellulose, frozen cellulose. It's got some flavor in it. Nutritionally, it's nothing. And the purpose of eating is to give nutrition to the body so it can function, not just fiber. I didn't cover a lot of things, like this thing of mixing of different food types, my understanding is this is one part of a whole series of discussions on vegetarianism, yes? Oh, this is a standalone. Oh, I thought it was.
It's like a series of classes for people.
Okay.
Well, there's the vegetarian food. Thank you very much.